June 6, 2010, it's the Wife from Pedro Show.
Thank you. shoved under rocks. You join the old drums. You also die.
June 6, 2010, here in San Pedro. started off the show with John Coltrane doing part of Love Supreme Resolution, but it was like a, it's listed as a breakdown, so I guess there was a clam or something. Or maybe a dropout. Some of those things was from references. I got the deluxe thing on 40th anniversary. I guess they'd have something running at 7.5 the whole time, so John Coltrane could listen to the day's works and stuff, what they call a reference. And so they got some kind of takes off that that weren't found on the album. So that's what that was. And it started with bass solo, so much respect to you. And then we heard something with our guest here, Christian.
Yep.
You heard him speaking on his testicles line check.
Testicles line check.
Testicles.
Welcome.
Yeah, welcome. Welcome aboard.
I'm at the Watch from Pedro show.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful day in Pedro today.
And your first time in this part of the town, right?
No, Triclops has actually played a couple times in Pedro. We played at Harold's once, and then we played a couple houses, some backyards. Were good times.
No, I mean first time in this part of the town.
This part of the town, yeah. Land's End, right?
Yeah. Near Point Fermin. In the Love Grotto, home of Brother Matt.
Welcome.
The Wild Kingdom. And so welcome to this part of town. So if you were in some house parties, maybe it was over on 13th and Pacific.
It could have been, yeah.
Or maybe before that was 4th Street.
Fellow named Danny put it on?
Danny Lou.
Yeah. Danny Lou.
Danny
rocks.
Yep.
He's a good beat.
Really good dude.
Partita. And maybe you played Harold's?
Yep, we did. We played with
Toys That Kill.
A band that you played with once there, Free Moral Agents.
Right.
And then,
They were from Long Beach, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it Underground Railroad at Candyland or Todd and the Bible Children? He's got many bands.
It might have been Candyland, but I'm drawing a blank. We played with the
finishing an album with him.
Yeah?
Yeah.
The Backyard Show, we played with the guys from Fullerton and the Pterodact Dudes. And you heard of those guys? Those guys are great. They're a great band. It's super high energy, super rocking.
Friends of Kid Kevin.
Huh?
Kid Kevin, he's actually Anaheim originally. A lot of these punk people you may met in Pedro aren't original Pedro. Danny Lou is, though.
Yeah.
A lot of these cats moved here, like Todd from Torrance and Kid Kevin from Anaheim. And
yeah. I met all these cats when I first came
here. Brother Matt's from here.
Oh, right on. I met all these guys when I came here, so it's tough to figure out exactly where they're from. And then they would just be there when we came back, so they're just
became. They moved there. Some guys came from the hill, like Vinny Vegas.
Yeah.
At Palos Verdes. Dirk Vandenberg, the guy who shot the cover of Double Nickels.
Yep.
He's been here since maybe 78. Mm-hmm. So a lot of, when they come, they stay.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them. And then a lot of the ones that are from here stay too.
Yeah, why leave?
Yeah. And you don't really drive through town.
Yeah, you gotta be wanting to come.
Because it's the end of the freeway, the Harbor Freeway ends here. So, but let's talk about where you live.
Keeps your neighborhood safe, right? Keeps the locals
bottled
friendly.
Up.
Or maybe not.
Bottled up. We like visitors. We like new people moving, too. Like I said, I was from Virginia. I came here when I was 10.
Oh, really?
My father was a sailor. But let's talk about where you live.
I live in the Haight-Ashbury district of San Francisco.
Okay.
I live with our bass player, Larry, who was in, Larry from
many years
ago. I know
Larry back
from
the victim's family.
Yeah. I think
bass player.
Those guys played mostly shows with Firehose, right? They didn't play with the Minutemen.
Not Minutemen, they ain't.
Yeah, that's not that back.
That's old, I was going to say. they're more young.
He's not that young.
They're more young. We don't use that old word.
No.
There's just
only
more
no
young
means no.
And less young.
Only no life. Means no uses the old world, the old word as a marketing tool.
Yeah. I'm not into the old word. I'm into less young
I'm
or
with
more
you,
young.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. But I know Larry from back then.
So I live with
Sawyer,
him.
Tim, the drummy man, we were talking about Les Claypool, and he worked with him for a while.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Maybe
yeah,
he's back with him. I don't know.
He cruises around a lot. He's a drum tech for lots of people.
Right. But he was a good drummer, too, in his own right.
Yeah, he's got a quick left hand, man. It's like always working no matter what. He's right-handed, but his left is the one that's always busy. It's weird to watch him. Because he literally just doesn't use any cymbals. He just uses a hi-hat for his accents. It's
Art
really
Blakey.
Cool. It's great. Yeah, right? Heard some stories about that guy being the way he was running his band.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of documentaries, man. That guy was all business.
Do you know about the Buddy Rich tapes? Speaking of drummers and business.
Oh, yeah, the ones where he's caught on tape.
He's talking
a little
pep talk
band.
After the band,
right?
Gig.
I heard about that.
About 10 minutes worth. I'll send you MP3. Everybody in the band should hear this. And, inspiration and heart to heart.
Mustache.
No, the beard.
Oh, his beard.
Yeah, it gets to, because you got it's a band, right? So you're going to discuss very important musical things like whether you're going to go on stage with a beard or not. Or it's a goddamn House of David baseball team. Or Buddy Rich Band, Young Men with Faces. Yeah. But I'll flow it to you and you'll know what I mean.
Right on.
I heard
nothing
find
about
it several
good stuff
places
about
on the
it.
Web. Some dudes have, in case, because the motor's running in the background, because it's in the bus right after. So some dudes have, transcribed it and fitted it like a Shakespearean play.
Yeah.
One dude made a comic book out of it, where every word of that tape is in the comic. And that's intense, because he's given graphic, because nobody saw what was happening.
Right.
Nobody heard the band either, but Nels Klein told me he met one of the cats that was on that tour, and he said, Nels, the band deserved it.
Yes,
it was like kind of weak.
Oh,
I don't know. By this point, it was like 83, 84, and Buddy was playing with kids out of college, and he was used to whatever.
Yeah.
His style was a little too military for me anyway. Oh, and speaking of which, the song we played from the new Triclops record.
Homage to Monte Cassino.
Helpers on the Other Side is the name of the album, and the song is Homage to Monte Cassino, Red. Red in parentheses. What's that mean?
It was a working title of the song because John was formulating the lyrics with an emphasis on how, I guess, how communism was, or the different vibes, the different political views or whatever, the stuff that people didn't understand but they were fighting for anyway, and he just titled it Red. So we had a reference
and
point.
Casino?
Yeah. And then we were in Europe driving around. And he was writing the lyrics, I think, in the front of the bus. After a while, I finally got it. And the first time we ever played the song live was on stage in at this little this cool little punk rock shack I'm drawing a blank on the name. But we had a translator. He just sung it in Italian, and she translated all the lyrics, and he just ended up.
Oh, so you played it in Italy?
Yeah, we debuted it in Italy, not too far away from the monastery.
Ah. Wow.
See, we played in. I'm drawing a blank. It's right on the Mediterranean. It's not a place that's too well known for being
Terracina?
A stop in. Huh?
Terracina?
Nope.
That's like a little. It's by on the water near Rome.
Piscata.
No, it's not Piscata. Yeah, I'll remember it in a little bit, of course.
It's okay.
I'm drawing
it's
a blank on it right
some
now.
Someplace in the middle of Italy.
It was a beautiful spot.
But on the coast.
Beautiful spot, yeah.
Which side? West, east?
The
Adriatic or Mediterranean?
Oh,
it was the east.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
So, Adriatic Sea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Ravenna?
Nope.
Rimini? It's okay. Cesena?
We'll remember sometime. We'll
Otranto.
Get there.
One time we were supposed to play in Otranto, but the gig got cut, but I rode a bicycle there. There's towns inside a castle, right on the water. It's beautiful, well, incredible bike ride. It's in the heel part.
Mm-hmm.
So all these olive trees and not a lot of hills. I got sunburned, though, man. It was like 20 miles each way.
I bet, man.
So, but I was the only cat to go there because the next day some screw up with permits, so it got changed to a town, a little town with a nun cloister. Pignilio, I think. And that's where I first saw Yumi Yumi, or the only time I saw. And they had a bunch. I remember a bunch of chow, man. I was just there in late November, December. I ate pasta every day. The guys I played with some Italian musicians, an album and some gigs. Great cats, Stefano and
Yeah, what was the name of that?
Sueño del Marinero.
Right.
The Sailor's Dream.
I remember getting the email.
Can we go back in your history, though, about musics?
Yeah, where you want to go?
Well, no, but let's play some music first, and then from the get-go, Pop Peter Show.
We'll be right back. Sugar Bang. Arrivato fresco fresco da Sing Sing. Io ho avuto da bambino Al Capone come padrino e mia madre mi allattava whisky e gin. Sono il dritto di Chicago, Sugar Bang. So sparare alla pistola con lo swing. Io con Jimmy l'ho sfregiato, sette banchi ho svaligiato nello spazio limitato d'un mattino.
Ragazzi, mamma mia che scago, quando per Chicago scendo a passeggiare. Ragazzi, prego sorridete, se lo disturbate, certo spara.
Sono il dritto di Chicago, Sugar Bay, deputato del distretto di Sing Sing. Quando vedo una ragazza, quella lì diventa pazza, perché Sugar tiene un fascino latino. Quando il grande poliziotto Peter Kahn fu in un bar di Cincinnati un po' villain, lì per lì senza riguardo sollevai un gran pigliardo e glielo mise al collo come una stracan. Quando ad Hollywood per caso capitai, ad un pranzo con Kim Novak non andai, ma di risate sempre ghiotto per veder Gianni e Pinotto, anche un bacio ad Ava Gardner rifiutai. Chicago Sugar Bean. Ho una villa prenotata giù a Sing Sing. Sorridete e salutate, state attenti alle boscate. Sono il dritto di Chicago Sugar Bean. Sono il dritto, yeah, di Chicago Sugar Bean.
Why for Pedro show, we just played a bunch of music from Italy there. I started off with Renato by L'Encanto, then The Battle of the Spiders by Musical Buzzino, then Sometimes with Our Knowledge by Sigori. There's one guy from San Jose. It's only 3/4 Italian, that band. Great band, though. And Il Dritto di Chicago by Riccardo Frassari. He's a drummer, but yeah, you can hear him playing the drum, but he ain't the only cat in the band. And maybe it's not his band. Maybe he's just playing drums for him. People should give drummers more credit. I thought he would want me to say that.
Good on you.
And then A Ray of Shadow from the Sun by, I don't know how to pronounce this. It's J-M, the @IKA. Is that Jamaica?
Sounds good. Ray from the Shadow, what is it?
A Ray of Shadow from the Sun.
Ray of Shadow from the Sun.
Yeah.
Nice title.
But they spell the band of the name. The band of the name.
The band of the name?
Yeah. J-M, @IKA.
So I'm thinking Jamaica?
Jamaica, man. Maybe it's a clever way spelled.
Jamaican.
Yeah. Bella, bella.
Bella.
So, Christian, we're going to talk about how you got started with music. When was the first time you...
I remember being in I was born in Hartford, Connecticut, and I grew up in this small town called Pequannock.
And see? Like a lot of Bay Area cats, not from there.
See?
That's why I said Larry.
Lots of transplants. Larry's a...
Your singer man.
Oh, yeah, Johnny. He's original Bay Area.
That's
man.
Right.
Yeah.
But you're Curious. Kay played bass in Black Flag, Connecticut.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, New Haven.
Yep. Played hockey there when I was a little kid.
Okay. Your town wasn't too far, huh?
No, everything was about 20 to 30 minutes away from all that stuff. But yeah, I remember I was in elementary school, and then there was an announcement over the intercom that said that, you know, you could get out of your fourth period class if you wanted to by going and signing up for this music program that literally just got started. And I was probably about 7 or 8 years old, and I was like, oh, this is great, man. I get to get out of class. I'll go check out what this scene is. So, you know, I raised my hand, and the teacher was like, who wants to go check out the music program? And I was right on it, first hand in the air.
You had never played an instrument. Did you ever have a record? Did you buy a record?
Yeah, my dad was in the Air Force, and he was stationed at Travis in the late 60s, and... You know, he cruised around, but for some reason he missed all the shows, but he caught the general vibe, and he definitely became a huge fan of a lot of the sounds coming out of San Francisco at the time, like most people that were into it. So he brought all those records with him, and then I grew up listening to a lot of that stuff. He's a huge Cream fan.
Uh-huh.
And
Jack Bruce.
Yeah, and Jefferson Airplane, and you know, he only listened to one Airplane album, and that was After Bathing at Baxter's. That was his jam.
That's a good jam.
Oh man, there's some instrumentals on the second side that are just beautiful.
So you've been hearing this.
Yeah.
But not driven to play yet. It was this get out of fourth period enticement.
It was all selfish, you know, less schooling, more fun, and I didn't have a handle on anything at all, and went down there.
You're going to have to learn music, though.
who would have known? So I went down there, and they said, yeah, they give you a list of instruments, and then you brought it home to your parents, and then you go through your finances and see which ones the parents want to pick up for you. And I actually wanted to play the trumpet. So I checked that one down, and I brought it home, and I think we had dinner with the folks that night, and that was, you know, here's what we did in school today. And Pop looked at it, and, you know, I'm pretty sure the deal, I was just talking to him about this when a few months ago. I was asking him for clarity, but he couldn't help me out with that. But I asked him, okay, so did it come down to, I had two choices. One was drums and one was trumpet. And I first choice was trumpet. And he said, okay, but if we spend the money on the trumpet, oh, we went to a music store and that's where we got the prices.
Yeah.
And he said, okay, if I spend the money on the trumpet, if I don't hear you practicing 5 times a week, you're in big trouble.
I'm a rapper.
He said, or I can buy you this practice pad and this pair of drumsticks, and I'll never yell at you ever. And I said, sold. I'm the drummer. Went back to elementary school, told him I was going to be the drummer, and started playing. The catch with this setup at Pequannock Elementary School was that they did pull you out of class to practice music.
Yeah.
So I was still getting out of class, and the excitement from getting out of class spilled over into the excitement of learning how to play drums.
Sure.
And then no drummer who starts off is ever happy about playing on a practice pad.
No.
They're just thinking that they get to bash out and be the good drummer immediately. So
Mitch Mitchell.
Yeah. And so I had to deal. Oh yeah, my pop is a huge Santana fan too.
Oh,
so
okay.
That those drummers are they were smoking. So.
But you're in school, so you're not getting to play really rock stuff. Right?
Oh, never. Yeah, so yeah. I got you know started doing the. Learning the
rudiments
and stuff like that. And then my dad found this really cool teacher. His name was Fred Bacchino. And he taught at the Windsor Music Center. And the place is still open. And he was just the most patient, most gifted, you know, jazz drummer. Wrote his own book, well-respected in the town. And he, you know, he made it really exciting. You would start off on the pad, learn the rudiments, and then he'd just move you over to the drum set, which you were waiting for.
Trap.
And then just say, okay, do the rudiments on the snare, and you build it up from there. So he started, and he would have recitals, you know, so you could play the, you know, play in front of the parents and all that stuff. That was the first time my parents ever heard me swear.
So you were doing a two-track. You were doing the school and this teacher.
Yeah, I was, building it up, getting really, you know, getting excited about it, getting really into it.
But no set yet. You're using his set.
No set
yet. The school stuff.
No set yet.
All you own is practice pad.
Practice pad.
Are you playing along the records yet?
No. I got the lead, and then there was auditions for the elementary school concert, and the theme was the, you know, Pee Wee Herman was a big movie at that time. You know, I'm 33 years old. So they were doing the tequila theme, you know, and nobody could get the ding 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 do ding do 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 do. And I muscled my way through the guys who had been there, you know, already had a handle on it, and I said, I got this, no problem, and I did it, and next thing you know, I was on stage doing it, and that was my first taste of the stage, and I'm like, oh man, this is for me, you know, hearing the parents clap and all that stuff, so
yeah,
that was cool. That started the fever for sure.
What about band?
So then my dad bought me a Remo kit.
So you got a whole trap kit.
Yeah, and my parents were always, man, they never ever wanted me to, you know, stop. Anytime I was playing it, they just never told me to. They were always dealing with it. They were always supportive.
They care about the bam-bam.
No, they were, they didn't. They were fine with it. Of course, you know, when you're developing the chops, it's not going to be very loud at first, you know. So, and then, you know.
Where'd you have it? In your bedroom?
In the bedroom.
Yeah.
You know, plugged into the stereo, headphones on.
Started
playing the records, and one of those records was the recital. It was a recital, and I had to play along with some Eagles tunes.
Eagles.
So I had to learn. I had to learn two Eagles tunes. I had to learn Long Run, and I had to learn Can't Tell You Why. It's probably off the Greatest Hits record by then at that point. But so that was my first recital drum. When I was in front of the parents, I had to do that one. You know, excited about that. Then my dad. Got rid of the Remos and bought me a Pearl set that was a little bit nicer because he said, "Oh, well,
Peter Criss."
Yeah, so that was.
Right.
I tell you what,
Pearl,
man.
Right.
So you know, I started reading the magazines, I started getting immersed in rock and roll. MTV was already on, and I started getting into that, you know. But a lot of the videos scared the crap out of me, like that Eddie Money video. There was an Eddie Money video that scared me where he turns into a vampire, and then Ozzy just. Put me, like, I ran under the covers for the Bark at the Moon video. That scared me to death. But then, like, Bowie had some good videos, and, you know, and Van Halen, of course. But,
So you're playing the videos?
No, I was just getting...
You're playing the records.
That was the first time I ever got a visual on...
Ah, because you hadn't been to a gig yet.
No way, man. Yeah. My first concert was 1986 Rush Hold Your Fire tour. You know, my dad was a huge Rush fan, so he brought me to Rush because he wanted to...
Les Claypool, actually.
He was like, wait till you see the drum set go do 360 turn, you know.
A lot of drums, too.
Right? But that was, you know, that was...
Terry Bozzio has more, but Neil Peart's up there.
Right?
And Nell's brother, Alex. In fact, he just stays in his house. His cymbal thing. He's got, like, 100 cymbals and shit. Yeah, I don't... I think he has a set for, like, gigs, but then there's this house set that, like...
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So, what about playing with dudes outside of school, like a band?
So, yeah, that started rolling, and
What were the guys from school?
See, I my parents got a, my dad got a job transfer down to St. Augustine, Florida when I was 13. So I was, you know, playing.
You lost
I was,
the teacher.
Hmm?
You lost your teacher.
I lost my teacher, but I gained another amazing teacher. Just so happened to luckily be this New York cat who had moved to St. Augustine. And he was, his name was Paul Lewis. He called himself Fats Lewis because he was just this large of Irish descent New Yorker dude. Big red beard, big hair, very Santa Claus, you know, Santa Mall guy. You know this guy? And yeah, and
did you go to the house
this,
there?
This
you know,
animal.
St. Augustine has the oldest house in the
America's. Yep. Yeah, oldest street, oldest
and then that
schoolhouse.
Fort that's made out of like crushed shells.
Coquina, right?
Coquina.
Yep. Castillo de San Marcos.
Yeah. Well, I didn't remember the name. That's good, but you live.
Well, I worked across the street from it for five straight years. Okay. I hope I remember the name.
And it could absorb the cannonballs because of the crushed shell stuff.
Right. Yeah.
So, so you're playing drums there?
Started, yeah, brought the kit down and started playing there and then went to school and just, you know, like, so, I, totally different world. So, you know, it's like taking somebody from suburban Portland or you know, like the middle of Oregon and putting them into Southern California, like putting them into Surf City, USA, where it's like I show up and I'm, you know, surrounded by all these different, this whole different scene and, eventually found some guy with a Led Zeppelin pin, and I was like, hey, man, and I had the, it was a physical graffiti pin, and I had the shirt, so I was like quick to try to, that was the introduction to anybody that was on my wavelength, so he was my best friend, his name is Joshua Clay, and he's my,
oh, so you like John Bonham?
Yeah, that, well, see that, my grandma bought me Song Remains the Same, behind my parents' back, and I was, I'd watch it at her house when I would visit, and I was just obsessed. I was, you know, fell in love with
video?
It. Yeah, that VHS that they came out with, the Madison Square Garden 1976 shows they did.
Wow.
And you know that video has like the you know the
Long
fairy.
Beach Arena.
Those are the tapes that are the best,
you
man.
Know about that,
that How the West Was Won. Oh my
I
God!
I don't know the names of them, but I remember when they were happening.
That's the best Zeppelin recorded
They're
stuff I've ever heard.
Band.
Ever heard. Right in Long Beach.
Yeah, Long Beach Arena.
Yep.
Across the bridge here. So, you meet a... When did this guy play?
He turned into a bass player, but, you know, it took a long time to get a band going. I just played with random people out of small amps in my room as well. My parents scored a really nice house, and I had my own jam room, my own kind of apartment off the side of the house right near, you know, near the pool or whatever.
Yeah.
And again, my dad soundproofed the room. You know, down for the cause, soundproof the room, built it up from scratch and, you know, let me go at it and just kept forming bands and starting it up. And then the first band that I ever played in was a band called Spontaneous Combustion. And we played like Wipeout.
Was it your band?
Yes, it was the first band I joined as a drummer.
Oh, and you joined? I joined.
Yeah. They had already played like maybe two dances or something like
was,
that. High school dances.
You came up with the name of the band.
No, I wish.
You guys did mainly covers?
Mainly covers, and our only gigs, Florida has the country's first, and I don't think it's the only one anymore, but they, St. Augustine has the first Florida deaf and blind, the nation's deaf and blind school.
Yeah.
They were the one that started it, and they had a half pipe in the back, and they would put on concerts. So the first gig that I ever played was at a deaf and blind school, and it was amazing. The place was packed, and they were always relating to it however they could. You know, and they were dancing like crazy.
Because they were deaf and blind, but the music was still reaching.
It was feeling them, yeah. They could see it, and they'd get excited about that, and then the deaf people were just rocking with the vibrations. So, you know, the first two gigs playing like Misfit covers and Wipeout and
Safari thing.
Some other stuff, like random stuff, I forget. But,
So you had the surf beat then, huh?
Yeah. I just play anything.
Thing.
I play anything anyone
People
told me
used to.
To
play that at Peter High on the benches with their knuckles.
Yeah. Get in trouble on the desks for sure.
This kind of thing.
So that started the fire.
That started the fire.
Oh yeah. And then I got really into heavy metal. And and started playing all that.
You're still on the Pearl set?
Believe it or not, I still got it.
Okay.
Yeah, I still got it. It sounds pretty good still, believe it or not.
So you start playing, does Spontaneous Combustion start playing metal songs?
Spontaneous Combustion combusts.
Oh.
And we form a new metal band with a, I'm 13 at this time, and we're playing with a 16-year-old, this is an interesting story, we're playing with a 16-year-old guy named, I'll never forget his name, Chet Babakaya, and Middle Eastern descent, very private family. They were always kind of whisking him away from hanging out at my house or anything like that. We'd rehearse for a while, and then they just, time to go home, and he'd, you know, I could never go over to his house for some reason. The name of this band was called Heresy. You know, and we took like pictures, black and white pictures on the tracks, you know, in the ruins of like an old college, you know, and with the cutoff metal shirts and stuff, and we got our big, and then during this band's time,
did you have big hair?
I had beautiful hair. Yeah, I didn't tease it up though, but I had long blonde flowing hair. I looked like a beautiful, beautiful woman. And I was the looker of the band. So the other guys were a little more harsh around, you know. But during this time, that big metal tour that happened. See, I don't know if you were even paying attention to this kind of crap when you went, because you were already a working man at this point. But that Clash of the Titans, they call it the death of metal. It was Slayer, Megadeth, and Alice in Chains. It was this big metal tour that was happening. I went to that. My parents let me go to that at 13. Saw that, changed my life. Went back home to
Lombardo.
Yeah, Lombardo. That was an amazing.
I have a big respect for him. I think he's a great drummer.
Yep. Went back home with, you know, burning with a fever to play. Started, you know, had a Slayer cover in our repertoire, but we had originals as well. So my
did you go to Double Kick?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. My foot was kind of fast. I could do like a little bit of accents, so I didn't think I needed a double kick yet. Even though I wanted one, my dad was like, "Whoa, hey, whoa, man."
Louis Belson.
All those cats.
Actually, Louis Belson invented the double kick. I saw him.
Really?
He's a jazz player. Yeah, way before metal.
Well, I know Billy Cobham was rocking them.
Yeah, with the Fuge. I saw Mahavishnu Orchestra at the Long Beach Arena, and he was actually he had three kick drums, but only played. It was for how he was sitting.
Yeah,
he was towards the hi-hat side or the tom-tom side, so you didn't play all three at the same time.
I think that's cool.
Yeah, they were
three different
clear
drum sets.
They weren't Vista-like, but they were clear. Mm-hmm. It wasn't made by Ludwig, but they were that type, all clear.
And to get off the subject of me, yeah. what was the crowd like for Mahavishnu? Was it a big
place?
It
was the Birds of Fire tour.
Was it?
And yeah, so it was all the original guys: Rick Laird, John McLaughlin, Jan Hammer, Jerry Goodman, and Billy Cobham. And it was kind of rock crowd.
Rock crowd?
Yeah.
They had a little bit
of a
crossover.
There wasn't Fusion yet. Mm-hmm. There were no Return to Forever in that, because they were a little ahead of that. So they were coming in the way. He kind of played this 12-string electric guitar through fuzz tone, so it was kind of rocking. He's on the Miles
record.
Yeah,
he was shredding.
In fact, there's a Miles song called John McLaughlin.
And on that record, there's a song called Miles Beyond, right?
Yeah.
And is there another cover of a Miles Davis song, too, on that record?
Birds of Fire?
Yeah. Or is it Miles? It's not Miles Way, is it?
We're talking like 74, 75, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
A little while ago, so I can't remember.
Me
so
neither.
Well.
I just got hit to the Mahavishnu like five years ago, and I recently saw Billy Cobham and at Yoshi's in San Francisco on the Spectrum Revisited tour. So he put
right,
out that
solo album.
Yeah, so he did some bits from that.
That was really popular. That was like one of the first rock drummer records to go gold.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So I brought,
George Hurley was into that.
Uh-huh.
Snoopy versus the Red Baron, right? Mm. At the end of it. But he was touring, doing Grateful Dead fusion covers, some way of doing Grateful Dead through fusion.
Really?
Yeah, I think he lives in Switzerland now, Billy Cobham. But he was amazing. I mean, that was a wild. It was a lot of notes.
Right.
But there was something about it where it wasn't like fusion. It wasn't like a talk show band. You know those bands when the commercial comes on?
Mm. Well,
kind of sound.
Yeah.
And they were like that. They were like a rock band. It was pretty. And then with that violin, too, I mean, Jerry Goodman played, you know, the arpeggios would build up and build up and build up. It was kind of aggressive.
Yeah, they definitely seemed pretty heavy for what they were doing. But they were really that really popular, right? Maybe the place you see
them
at, a big place?
I saw them at the Long Beach, but they had a curtain.
It wasn't in the arena?
It was the arena.
Oh, it was.
They had a curtain. When they had the curtain.
Sometimes some gigs they would curtain off. In fact, you know, Nick Davis and I did. You've played a lot of tours, and you know about character builder gigs.
I think I've played nothing but character builder gigs.
Okay, so we came up with this idea for character builder gigs called the anti-cave device. And it was a gigantic collapsible curtain rod and big-ass curtain. And no matter, you know, how many people are in there, you just move that curtain rod up to the stage, you know. Like, boy, it's crowded in here. So anyway, the Long Beach Arena had so that's what gave you the seed of my anti-cave device idea. And kind of a, like, managing your character builder gigs. Right? I mean, your deaf and dumb gig was definitely a packed gig, but you came to learn later that all gigs are not created equal.
No, they're not. They're not. But, you know, it's all open to interpretation. You can either make yourself miserable, or you can...
Yeah, right. Have expectations.
Or you can
That's
why
I find where the real music people are, and the other people are just coasting on maybe some entertainment vibe. But if you're into playing gigs...
I think
one character builder.
A recent story for Triclops is we were on tour and we were playing in a really small. We were in Europe for the first time. My first time to Europe. The other guys have been a bunch of times. So they're, you know, I was like the whippersnapper. And then we were playing a small town, again, drawing a blank on a name. You know, big, I want to call it cow town, but it was, maybe that's not the right term for Europe. It was like, you know, in the middle of a bunch of pastures, really small village, obviously. You know, nothing going on. We played in this, like, teen center that somehow still, you know, serves beer or whatever. And they booked us onto a show that they were convinced was going to be huge because there was some members of the popular local band that were trying a new band, and it was their first show, and they thought it was going to be a big deal. So we were in the middle of the bill. And, you know, during the first band set, we were just kind of like, oh, well, this is going to be the, you know, this is going to be the, we'll just call it the dud of the tour. And, but we didn't care. We were happy. We were just to be there, and we were checking it out. And then kind of set up, and, you know, I'm saying there was like 10 people there, maybe 15. And right before we played, these two cats come bursting in the door, like full of energy, running at us 100 miles an hour, asking us if we played yet. And we were like tuning up. We thought it was funny. We're like, no, man, of course we didn't play yet. You know, we're right here, you know.
Yeah.
And then our Johnny recognized him from a couple gigs ago, I guess, or in Berlin and there, or somewhere. But it turns out that the dudes drove 4 hours to get to this town to see us that night, and they just made it right on time. And that, just knowing that that happened, channeling that energy from those guys, made it like the best show ever, you know. Because all it took was two of them.
Yeah.
You know, and then everyone around him caught fire with their energy, and the whole place, you know, was just one big dance party. So it was, you know, it might seem like a dud, but it, you know, if you flip it around, it's going to be a great show no matter what.
I've had dud gigs with lots of people. Those are embarrassing.
The dud gigs, I guess, are when you think you're off, not when
you're blowing clams and shit.
You played a lot more gigs than me, so you know.
It's very subjective.
Mm-hmm.
Some people like that was a great gig, and you're thinking, "Oh man, I stunk it up." Now I have it. But you gotta let it go because they should be in charge of their own interpretation.
Yeah, you don't.
Or you might think you did good. They think you.
That's always the case.
Yeah.
Every time I think it's the best show ever, you know, somebody that's seen us a couple of times is like, "It's all right."
Yeah.
I was like, "What are you talking about?" You know.
So we're at the end of the first hour, Walk from Pedro show, June 6, 2010. We're going to hear more because we already jumped from Heresy to Triclops. There's stuff in between.
There's some stuff in between.
June 6, 2010, the second hour of the Walk from Pedro show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our show, we started the second hour off with something from Sean Lennon's new record called Yorick's Skull. You know Yorick? We're going to have it here in the summer. It's going to be over here at Point Fermin. Shakespeare by the Sea.
Yorick, Hamlet.
Remember when Hamlet, right, his buddy, he picks up the, you know, soliloquy to be or not to be, to piss or not to piss. With a piss bottle, that's never the question. I'm never gonna fucking suffer again. People get disgusted, but so somebody was riding in the boat. It was Joe Boone. Joe Boone wouldn't use a piss bottle. Okay. Suffer.
That's exactly what happens.
There's cancer. Suffering is that thing came in handy.
That was a cool moment. Have you guys seen that movie Crazy Heart yet? The one that Jeff Bridges does he's a bad Blake, the country guy. Who's
a piss bottle?
The first scene of the movie, he pulls up to the gate. This is amazing. I instantly like the movie from, you know, there's these beautiful shots of, I think they're in New Mexico. He's driving to the gig. He's on tour. He doesn't know where he's playing. He has no itinerary. He just has the directions, obviously, because he didn't know where he was going. So when he gets to the place, it's a bowling alley.
Yeah.
And he just gets right out of the passenger, the driver's seat, gets out, dumps his piss bottle right on camera. And pulls his pants up because his belt's all hanging out. I'm like, every touring musician's going to love this one, man.
It happened to me once at the border. Coming from Canada and the U.S., I used piss bottle. I forgot to. I like Levi's with buttons because it's safer. But I forgot. And when the customs officer, you know, asked me to exit the vehicle, it was like that.
You know, I don't want to inspect your Johnson, son.
Okay. Thank you. Sometimes there's cavity search. You know what the number one strategy for cavity search is? Buck back.
Buck back?
They're still
I'm still thinking about it.
After Yorick's Skull, we heard Robert Pollard with Rice Train. You know Robert Pollard?
Yep.
This guy's made 10,000 albums or so. How many songs can this cat write? There's like 30 songs on every album.
I don't know, man. How much free time? That's just all he does every day, huh? I thought he was a school teacher.
He was, when he was starting music. Dayton.
Who was grading the papers?
Thurston turned me on. And then we heard Boogie Woogie Waltz. Something live. Nels Klein Singers. Nels Klein's got a new album out, a double album, one live, one studio. And this is a live tune from, I think, Café du Nord.
Mm, it plays there for the frequency, yep.
And
he just came up and played this new spot in the Mission District of San Francisco that's like, I think it's something like a flower, it's like the flower shop or something it's called. I forget the name, but it's, I believe it's in an antiques, but it's a basement in an antique store. And the drummer, Phil from Triclops, went and said it was shredding.
Oh, yeah, it was amazing. Incredible.
Nell's and Scott at Amendola.
Right, and probably Devin Hoff
and
on the bass.
Devin Hoff, yeah.
That's Nell's Klein Singers. But on this song here, they had some guests. John, Greg Satomi from Deerhoof.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool.
And then we heard...
Those guys are great, man.
Celestica, I think is the name of it. It's a Thurston Moore remix. That's why I played it, because I've not heard many Thurston Moore remixes. It's kind of a disco song by a band called Crystal Castles.
And he remixed it?
Yeah. And then we heard Gary Reggie by a band called Der Plan. Dusseldorf? I had these records. They had two albums, 79 and 80, and I hadn't heard them for a long time. And I found them. And that's one of the tunes. They were a trippy band. Dusseldorf, same town that Kraftwerk came out. And so they were like punk people doing the kind of Kraftwerk thing.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting albums. Crazy band, very experimental. Yeah, now you're still in Heresy. Back to your musical journey.
Here's the end of the Heresy story, which is amazing. So we get our big breakthrough gig because where I live, my next door neighbor works for the local cable network, and they're doing a filming of a Special Olympics race. And the way the town is set up, there's like a gazebo in the middle of the town, and the Special Olympians do the race, and they run over, it's called the Bridge of Lions, and it runs over water. The drawbridge. They run over the bridge, and then they all spill over into the gazebo. And they're, in addition to the you know, the joy and accomplishment of finishing the race, they get Heresy doing Slayer covers
in the gazebo.
As the main attraction, right? So we're playing. We play our full set, and you know the locals. You know, it's all like metal, and our singer sings in a King Diamond style voice, really high, really piercing, screeching high.
Rob Halford,
yeah. And while he's doing,
play the whiskey.
Who?
Judas Priest.
Oh yeah.
You know the whiskey holds
the other
people.
Of course you did,
man. Saw the first, yeah.
Yeah.
You know who opened up was Gary Valentine. He was the first bass player of Blondie. So like this new wave power pop trio, and then Judas Priest.
Power pop trio.
Yeah, it was. Talk about a trippy lineup.
See, man, off the subject already. I miss that. I miss that about, you know, I don't see a lot of that happening. Yeah, it seems like you guys were always involved in that, and in the 90s, and, I mean, you know, diversity seemed to make the scene. I mean, it must have pulled all the numbers for the crowd into it. I mean, nowadays, a lot of the music kind of could, maybe the band's not exactly the same, but, you know, the evenings are kind of planned to cater to certain pockets and demographics, and that, I mean, the way when you trailblazed for all of us, it wasn't like that, huh?
Well, the Europe festivals are kind of diverse.
Yeah.
They have different stages. And maybe this Coachella thing in the U.S., they have different bands. I mean,
like when you were touring in the late 80s and 90s, like the bills were always kind of surprising, yeah?
Yeah, oh yeah. We played by some trivia.
I mean, I know you played all the punkers.
Oh yeah, we played for a lot.
Like in the 90s, like Firehose was all 90s, yeah?
Started 86.
86?
Yeah. So 86 to 93.
Okay.
Seven and a half years. But anyway, what happened with the Heresy gig?
So we play the gig, and it turns out that they film it from a couple different angles, and we didn't know this at the time, but it was going to air on the local cable access channel every day for the next year. We didn't know that. And right after the gig, we all went to my house. I had a pool. We had a, you know, pool party, pizza and soda, and you know, I'm riding high, man. You know, just saw Slayer a week ago. Just played my big signed a drumstick. I'm like rock star at this point, right? And then our guitar player, you know, Chet, his parents come to pick him up, and trying to get a, and so, you know, night ends, I'm riding high, I'm trying to get a band practice scheduled as soon as possible to get something going. Can't get a hold of the guy. Won't call me back. School's, he's already done with school. High school is done. He graduated that year, so I ain't gonna see him. I'm not gonna see him in school next year. I can't find him. I'm trying. I keep trying. I said, you know what, man? I gotta get a ride over to his house and see what's going on. I get a ride over to his house. House is empty.
He moved.
Nothing even there. So I was. We were under this impression that he was in the witness protection program because he was always so. He was always kept so. You know, so at home he was. You know. I guess kept, and went to high school, and that was it. And as soon as he was out in the, in public, and then he was going to be on television, they were gone. So that was the end of heresy.
Well, the band's over.
Band's over.
Okay, but now we're going to have the beginning of Brother Matt's spin cycle.
Oh, cool.
And you're not going to jam with him on drums. You're going to jam with him on guitar. So, hold up.
Yep.
Bye.
From Pedro Show. Watt from Pedro Show. Thank you very much, Christian, for joining us.
Yeah,
Brother Matt, spin second. Brother Matt, what was your inspiration, motivation?
Well, we start off with John Coltrane on Atari and figured to just kind of go with that flow.
And for you, Christian, you didn't know what was coming.
No, man. I thought it was cool to put me in the hot seat like that.
Yeah, and a guitar with no effects.
Guitar, no effects, and minimal volume, and you got to go for it as best you can.
There's also a little latency, because you got to go through the circuitry.
I noticed that.
You compensated pretty good.
It was fun. You could actually pretend it was an effect, you know? It was cool.
A delay, an echo without the first sound. Right? It's like a delay without the first. Well,
all the notes can't be pretty, right?
It's flavor.
It was pretty good. Yeah, good rhythm. Your right hand, real good. Respect. We're at the end of the second hour, June 6, 2010, Watt Pedro Show. Hold tight for hour three. June 6, 2010, it's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
The carnival rides. Get your tickets now. Guess how many human variables here tonight. Throw a quasi-ergodic curve in space and win a hot water bottle. Hit the perpendicular harmonic oscillators with a plasmatic hammer. Win a rational connection to an irrelevant difference. Win a date with Zeta, the breakaway gene. Ride the survival machine through spirals passing their origins. Find the hot wire of neutral circuitry with all the seashells in the galaxies. you can carry to the end of time. Win, Roy Acuff's Great Speckled Bird.
Rock for Pedro show. Start off the third hour with somebody who used to live in San Francisco. Used to live on, how do you pronounce it, Gough?
Gough or Goff?
Like the painter.
Go?
Because the locals Dutch, call it the local.
Yeah, like, was that Felon Go?
The locals call it Gough.
Gough.
For
like
some
with
reason.
The F there, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Charlie used to live there. That we heard Carnival by Charlie Plimel, and he used to live with Allen Ginsberg and Neil Cassidy in a house there on Gough.
On Gough.
And he put out the first Zap comic.
Oh, really?
Yeah, underground comic. That was Palm of his. Then we heard a couple things from Japan. Drops by Light. Where did I play with Light in San Francisco? Oh, Bottom of the Hill.
Yeah, Bottom of the Hill. Those guys are great.
Oh, you saw them from Tokyo. That was
their,
the first time there.
Yeah, I picked up their disc.
They were so
excited.
They're
super cool dudes, and they were really happy.
Yeah.
And they had a good response, spirit. Too. They were,
and people knew nothing about them. They only knew them for the music they played that night. There was no hype.
Yep.
Yeah. We did that radio show, Pirate Cat.
Did you?
Yeah, Mike, cool people.
Yeah, I've been
came
there.
Came over there and talked. Yeah, it's like a little cafe.
It's a cool little spot, you know, and you can see the street, bunch of windows, just right there. You'd never think there'd be a radio station sitting there, you know? Strange.
Yeah, and then we heard Snow Coach by Wakine. A little organic. I wouldn't call it drum circle music. Now, look, speaking of drum circles, you left the drum circle.
I left the drum circle.
For guitar.
After years of playing in, you know, different bands and just being a surfer and a beach bum.
This is your Florida life.
Happy about that. Yeah, living the sunset lifestyle. And a bunch of things spilled over into one year. I just turned 18. I got in an accident where my truck, it wasn't a bad accident, but my truck got totaled. My girlfriend dumped me because I didn't have a nice truck anymore. And my band broke up.
She seems like a very deep person.
Yeah, a lot of depth at 17 or whatever. So she dumped me because my truck wasn't rocking.
You don't
rockin'.
Use yardstick, right?
Showed up I showed up in a blue Tempo, and after that was the car I got in place of that, and she wasn't having that.
You wouldn't measure the depth of the yardstick. You use a micrometer.
Micrometer.
So, to make light of a tragic thing like that. But she's gone.
But it was a learning experience. So it was a. My band broke up, which I was really happy about. I didn't want the band to break up at the time, but the truck broke down, the girlfriend dumped me, and the band broke up at the same time.
Damn.
So it was a crossroads. So I was like, all right, I know I got to do something to pull myself out of these doldrums.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got to find some new inspiration.
Yeah.
What do I do? And right at that moment, I went on a vacation to visit my cousins up in New Britain, Connecticut, and they turned me on to Sonic Youth.
Ah.
And I never heard them before. You know,
they're a Northeast band.
And so what happened was I sat
actually,
in their apartment.
Actually, you know, Thurston grew up in Danbury.
Right, yeah, he's a
the
Connecticut
western
guy,
part
too.
Of state, yeah.
Yep. Isn't Bethel in there somewhere, too?
Do you live in Bethel,
Bethel
too? I know Danbury.
Yeah.
But I don't know which part of his life. It's his later part, I know, because that's where he made the journeys to Manhattan.
Right, yep. So, yeah, I got fell in love with all that stuff and just, you know, that was a whole new world. Yeah, that was a whole new world to me, so I decided to start playing guitar.
Oh, you didn't want to be Steve Shelley?
I didn't. No.
He's from Michigan.
I was super psyched on Dale Crover and Dave Grohl, but I wanted to play guitar instead. So I just started playing guitar because this is going to sound strange, but I figured if, you know.
Oh, so you kind of left metal music to listen to punk music.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I was in the Florida death metal scene at the time, so it wasn't like. You know, that was like punk rock for Florida. That was like the underground, like tape trading, all the same parallels as what was going on. And I got really psyched on I bought terrible friend or Stratocaster off a friend of mine. He sold me his amp. He sold me a Big Muff pedal, and I was instantly rocking, you know, just playing like three chords because I figured that's what, you know, that's exactly what all those bands were doing. Nirvana was doing a couple chords and... You know, couldn't write the songs like that, but I was just like, oh, let's just jam these tunes and see what happens.
Yeah.
So I grabbed my buddy with the Led Zeppelin pin, the bass player, who was the bass player of Heresy. He joined that band. We started that band. We called it Spitfire.
Did you change your look?
Didn't. I'm still a surfer dude. I did cut the hair though.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I did cut the hair. That was another rebellion against the. It was the start of new life. Cut the hair. Lost all my powers.
Yeah, Samson.
Totally, man. So yeah, started that, and then you know played up and down the coast with that, and you know didn't.
What was the name of this band?
This band was called Spitfire.
Spitfire.
And I was playing guitar and singing. I was doing my best to try to do it, and you know we were trying to rip
drumming?
Off. A high school buddy that I kind of, you know, reminded him that he played drums in high school and kind of told him that what I basically just dusted this cat off. I found him surfing in the lineup one day and I said, "Hey man, you want to play drums?" And he goes, "Yeah, I haven't played drums in 5 years. Cool." So we made a band out of nothing.
But you being former drummy, could you direct him?
That was an exercise in patience. I did. I had to. I got frustrated easily.
Was it? Yeah, oh, okay.
Because I wanted him to perform how it was in my head.
Yeah, right.
You know, and I was, when I was young and I wasn't patient enough to be like, oh man, this cat hasn't played in a long time. He has to go through his own way of figuring it out. But man, we worked hard for 2 years and then we finally figured out how to put a CD out. Because unlike down there, we had to make our own clubs. You know, there was like one place that, you know, everyone played when I was too young to play out. And then there was not really any venues. You know, we had to find our own spots. So the same 50 people would come to the same shows. And everyone was a, you know, community. It was a tight community. But there was no...
Did you ever get to Gainesburg?
There was...
Gainesville?
Gainesville.
The Covered Dish?
Barely. We go to see shows there, but couldn't get a gig.
Because
we, you know, couldn't draw anybody.
Sure.
So, Gainesburg.
I played there many, many times.
No, it's a good spot. That's one of the good spots there.
It's a college town.
Yeah.
It's
Austin,
Florida, but I think Tom Petty's from there.
Yeah.
It's very harsh in the summertime.
Oh, yeah. Everywhere. Weather. No matter what. Everywhere.
But especially there, there's not by the sea.
It's
so
not,
so yeah. You're having to do your own thing. So you start touring.
We're doing this thing, and we start picking up shows on the East Coast, and mm-hmm. you know, and finally figured out how to put a CD out, and did that, and then decided, you know, and then a bunch of friends of mine, who I looked up to a lot, decided.
Oh, you're writing songs.
I'm writing the songs and the lyrics.
In Heresy, were you writing the songs on the drums?
I mean, I had an active role of arranging them, but you know, it was just beats.
So these are your first songs you're
writing.
So this is
like my first, like, you know, really getting into, like, you know, writing the song from the guitar up. So we, you know, some friends of mine decided that they were going to try to jump out into bigger waters and move to San Francisco. So they did. And then I was sitting around the town, and they were like the town band for me. They went through a number of different names, but they were always like a really heavy, like, you know, grunge, like, power punk, or, you know, like with a pop sensibility kind of thing band. And I looked up to them a lot, and they moved out there. And I just decided after they left, and I said, well, A, we just lost the good band of the town, and B, I'm just going to move to San Francisco and join their band.
Ah.
And they didn't really want me to join their band. So I decided to sell everything.
Bum rush?
Bum rush. I asked them, I said, listen, man, if I show up in San Francisco, do I have a shot? Do I have an audition? And they said, no promises, but if you show up, you get one shot. And I was like, perfect, that's all I need. Learned the songs, went there, took my shot, nailed it. They still didn't want me in the band, but I forced myself on them. And then that was how I learned, you know, and I moved in with a
what
cat.
What were they called then?
What?
When you made it, what were they called then?
The band was called The Clinics. And they later became Bottles and Skulls, against everyone's wishes.
Why, that's the best name in the world.
You're the fifth person to think that. That's cool. If we only had Watts' stamp of approval back then, we might have believed in it a little
bit
more.
The trippy name is those Tokyo Kids, you know, Light. I told them, they didn't know, you know. That's the name of one of the worst beers in the U.S. You know, Miller owns the copyright. All the other Light beers have to say GHT, but they own the L-I-T-E.
It is. That's
false. They didn't know. They
foul
were called A Slide or something. They were a dance band, and they, I think they were thinking of, you know, because they don't use our letters anyway, so they were thinking of, like, Light, you know, like from a flashlight or something. But, yeah, band names are trippy. But what was the sound like?
Easy, man.
Were they still like power?
It was
grunge,
no.
Pop?
They morphed into more of a like clash punk sound with a little bit more of like at the time like you know those there was bands like the Zeke and Motorhead and
oh Zeke
the
Seattle.
Stuff was all yeah that was like pretty. There was a big presence of that in San Francisco at the time.
Dwarves
were a big influence on that. Yeah. So that just started, and then we did that for a number of years and toured the U.S. and had a couple terrible tours. Lots of good stories, though. Recorded a couple albums, and yeah, we recorded one of them we did with Jack and Dino up in Seattle.
Ah.
That was our big studio moment. He was a cool cat to work with. He
was it hard to live in San Francisco compared to living in Florida?
No, I loved it. I was freezing to death, but I loved it. And we
rent's a little higher.
What we did was we got an apartment in a building that the singer's ex-girlfriend owned, and she gave us cheap rent. And then to make it even cheaper, we had our girlfriends move in.
So
it was $250 a month, yeah. So we could go on tour no matter what, but because we weren't making anything at all, you know, it was more than bare bones, you know. But then I met Johnny, the singer of Triclops, on tours with his other band, Fleshies, who were putting out records with Jello. And going back to that story about the curtain,
yeah,
Fleshies had this really cool thing they pulled one time when we were playing in Sacramento. We were playing this big open warehouse that had a skate ramp in it somewhere. And Bottles and Skulls played with our backs against the wall, facing the whole thing. Well, Fleshies decided to set up facing a corner, and they set up real close to the corner. Yeah. So all 50 people that were there crowded into the corner, and it was amazing. Yeah. I was like, oh, man, you one-upped us for sure. You know, all of a sudden, it was like this super cool gig, you know. I was thinking about that.
Creative thinking.
Yeah, man, it was cool. It was my first time I've seen something like that. That was neat.
It's ingenuity.
Yeah, they were quick on their feet. So then both bands broke up at the same time, and John and I were kind of talking to each other through it, complaining about it, really.
Bumming on each other's bands.
Yeah, like giving, you know, he'd tell me a funny story, I'd tell him a funny story, and then one day we were like, yeah, if we're going to start a band, I'd do this, this, and this, and then we both said, well, let's start a band and do that. So then it was just me and him, and we knew what we wanted to do, and I wasn't the songwriter in Bottles and Skulls. I was just a rhythm guitar player that could play with one finger and drop D and get drunk, you know. Yeah. So
very difficult.
I finally had a chance to actually break out of my shell and play and really go for it, and I decided to take it. And at the time, I was listening to a lot of Mars Volta, a lot of Mahavishnu Orchestra, and I was just getting into somebody bought me the Ken Burns jazz documentary, and I was listening to Masada, Electric Masada, and Secret Chiefs 3. And
Masada is a John Zorn.
John Zorn, yeah. Electric Masadas with Mark Ribot.
Yeah,
and
guitar.
Shazad Omali, Chess Smith was in there.
Drums.
Yeah, shredders.
Buddy Anels.
Yeah.
Chess.
And just got really into it and wanted to push my own limits. Finally got into that mentality.
Well, what about the other two? How'd you get them?
So we found the drummer on a Craigslist ad that we posted, and we put all these drummers' names in there, and the one that did it for him was Billy Cobham. Because Phil just so happened to be a Cobham freak, and he had an Orange Vista Light Fives kit. So he was like, oh man, these guys are dropping Billy Cobham.
That's the one's Cobham.
Yeah. So they were like, well, if these guys have the audacity to drop Billy Cobham, I'm going to call these guys on it, and I'm going to go jam with these guys. So I, you know, found him on Craigslist, went to jam with him. Chemistry was great. So we had a drummer.
Yeah, I like him. He's good.
And then I went to see Larry's band that I'd never seen before, that band called Hellworms that he was in.
Yeah, after Victim Panther.
Yeah.
Right.
After Saturn's Flea Caller. Yeah, after Saturn's Flea Caller, too. And I saw him on bass, and I was like, that's the guy, man. Like, he can do it. So we had to rope him into it. At the time, he was in, like, five bands. So he quit all of the bands to play in Triclops.
Wow.
And we had our unit, and we started going for it. And, you know, we worked really hard for 4 years.
And Jella put out your records.
He put out the last two, yeah. Out of Africa was the first one we did with him, and then this one, that Helper's on the Other Side.
Did he come to a gig?
Hmm?
Or he knew you from Johnny being with Fleshies?
John and Larry, you know. Larry putting out records for 15 years with him already.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that wasn't too hard. He was actually bummed because we did our EP on a fellow who's in this, sitting, a friend of mine who's sitting right next to me, Mitch Cheney, had a record label called Sick Room Records in Chicago.
Yeah.
And he put out the EP, our first EP, because we wanted to, those guys wanted to do something different, and I said, well, let's do it with this guy. So that was cool. So we did that. Did some picture disc vinyl on a label out of Missing Finger out of Brooklyn, and then got hooked up with Jello because we were originally going to do it with GSL.
Yeah.
And they folded right when we were in the studio. So yeah. Sonny put out a 7-inch instead, and then we did the album with Jello.
Now, my first time seeing you was here, well, not Pedro, but Echo Park, at the Echo. It used to be called Narita. It was a Guatemala nightclub.
Oh, yeah?
You can still see it on the outside, the former sign. But that's where I saw you were opening up for Hanson Brothers.
Right.
Which are the Wright Brothers from No Means No.
Yep.
And that, maybe I was late train coming. Because that's many years into your thing, right? 3 years?
Two years.
Yeah.
Maybe so even.
I'm a latecomer, but I really dug the gig. I thought you guys were wild.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to meet you that night, but I was stoked that Larry told me you were super into it.
Yeah, I watched the whole thing, and you guys played before them.
Mm-hmm.
But I always try to see all the bands, because you don't know what you're going to see.
Yeah.
And, man, I was really happy I got to see Tri-Cloud. You know, because
shows are the most fun, you know.
The song's kind of long compared to other punk bands. They don't, they develop into, like, stories. They're not the brief things so was, much, like,
yeah.
Where I'm from.
Conscious effort to make them to not write like that, definitely to make them epics or just be absurd, really. You know, it was like we all came from the small song punk bands, and we were like, let's just keep telling the tale and not even stop, and, you know, and who cares what, you know, let's just do it. So in the first song we wrote was 10 minutes long, and that was cool. But the problem with writing long songs is picking the set list. Because you usually got about 30 minutes.
Yeah, so there's three
and you're
songs.
Like, oh, man, but I really want to play this one. And I'm like, well, how long is that? 9 minutes. Ah, well, if we do that, we can't do this one because it's the one. So usually about 5 song sets.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah. That's how this was. And Johnny had such a wild stage thing. He had some flashlights taped to his shoes. And long mic cable. Reminded me of a New Orleans band in the old days called the Sluts, where Dave Slut had some 70-foot mic cable and shit ran all over the place, you know. I think that's what his name was.
Dave Slut?
Yeah. It was a long time ago. Actually, he was under consideration to be a Black Flag singer.
Oh, yeah?
Henry ended up getting it, but he was one of the dudes under consideration. But he had a long mic cable. He would make many journeys around the pad. And
yep.
Days before wireless, you had to have a big thing, you know, to do that. But then the music, too, was very engaging to me. The whole thing. I really liked your band a lot. You brought your acoustic guitar.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get that going. I'll play some music first. Watch from Pedro show. We heard something from V612 Project. That's got Todd from Liquid Jesus.
Oh, cool.
And he wrote a song called Watt Train. He told me it was from me. Then we heard Lies and the Lying Liars That Sell Them by Victory and Associates. I think they're San Francisco band. You know Victory and
familiar.
Associates? I know there's a lot of bands up there.
Oh, wait, I'm thinking of a book that says Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them. Right.
This is Sell Them, so it's very close.
Uh-huh.
Maybe that's where they got it. And then we heard Standard Punishment by Force Vomit. I'll Let You In on a Secret by Sister Psych. And Butt Slop from Bass Amp and Dano. And I was told that I was inspiration for that song. but now, seriously, we are going to hear Christian now play some acoustic guitar.
I'm going to follow up Butt Slop with some acoustic?
Yeah, but,
wow, man.
But still no effects.
All right. I can just go ahead and follow up Butt Slop right now? Okay.
Yeah, you bring up the rear.
I got out of tune there. I was going to finish the song, but it sounded too bad to keep going, man.
thank you very much. Out of tune's okay. Sometimes.
There you go.
Jazzy dissonance.
Yeah, I was trying to rip off the Cashmere tuning one day, and I accidentally tuned my guitar wrong, and it ended up being something that I really liked, so I just decided to keep doing it. So a lot of the stuff that I'm, the acoustic stuff I just played is just riffing on an open tuning. You know,
yeah.
Which is fun. It makes guitar playing a little easier. Might have done that for the jam if I had known what was coming. Got me out there in standard tuning alone. Help! I'm in standard. Help!
Oh, yeah,
how often
yeah.
does Thurston Moore play in standard tuning?
I wonder.
That's a good question.
I know I'd come over his pad.
Some blues jams, maybe?
And it would be fucking hard. You see a guitar there, and hey, I want to do Born on the Bayou or something. It'd be like, dong, ding, dong, ding, ding, ding. Are there 6B strings or something?
Yep.
You never done one of these Glenn Branca? I know he did one up in San Francisco. I was part of one.
Oh, no, I hadn't seen it.
4 years ago?
Nope.
It was 64 guitars, 20 basses, one drummer.
Right.
And interesting tunings for the guitar. I got to play standard. But it was quite a piece. It was some 4 big movements. We had to read music and... I was sitting right next to drummer, Virgil. He played with the Swans for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
But and I was watching the conductor counted out every beat.
Uh-huh.
It was tough, but it was pretty intense. It was at the Disney Music thing downtown.
So when you know, given the story of how you started playing, did you somewhere along the line learn how to read music?
Yeah.
You already knew?
No.
No? But you did? You schooled yourself?
You know, I tried clarinet in the 7th grade, and after 10 weeks, the teacher said, you try hard, Watt. But...
Well, see, I failed music theory, too, but I was the drummer of the jazz
the theory?
Band.
I was 7th grade, and when they're trying to do, like, jazzy version of Hark the Herald Angel Singer, the We Three Kings or some shit.
Uh-huh.
Should have been We Free Kings. Who was that? Roland Kirk? No, it was... I was terrible. But I went and learned as I got less younger. So I could, do stuff like that. It's still tough. I can only do bass clef kind of competently. But sight reading's tough. I think you have to do it all the time to keep on the prac. But, man, I really wanted to be part of this piece. And so I got on it. For that.
Was it?
But I do it sometimes. People give me stuff and I have to read it off there. And
mm-hmm. You played with a band from San Francisco, Al-Qaeda?
Yeah. What
yeah?
a name.
What was the connection with that?
A guy just asked me.
Yeah?
I didn't know him. Some young people.
Did you come up to play with them or did you bring the band?
No, they live up there.
You just came to play with them specifically?
Yeah.
I missed the gig. I was working or something.
Yeah, at Hemlock.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some gigs down here. There was one in San Diego. They just asked me to play with them. First, he asked me to put bass on a song. People send me music. I just made an album with a guy in Montreal. I never even met him. 10 songs he just sent me, and I just put bass on it. So it was something like that.
Uh-huh.
There are people in their, middle 20s or something. And, everybody's got something to teach you.
Yeah.
So I just thought by putting myself in a situation, I had nothing, sort of like being dumped in the spin cycle there. You just have to go for it, you know?
Yeah.
And, it was kind of pants shitter.
Well, to be honest with you, man, that's the same reason that I'm playing acoustic solo, because the idea terrified me, because I'm used to hiding behind a wall of sound and wah pedals and delay pedals. And then I realized, I was like, man, I like playing this at my house, but do I have the guts to do it in front of anybody? And
yeah.
For many years, I knew that I didn't. And then I was forced to at a Triclops promo gig in Marseille, France. And the only thing that got me through is that I knew that I couldn't really communicate. So it was cool. I just said, all right, well, they're going to enjoy this however they do. And that was the thing that gave me enough confidence to do it.
Well, I respect.
But the first time I did it in San Francisco, I dressed up as an old man. And
I don't have to do that.
I mean, I dressed up as a really like weird looking old guy that could
have
came off the
street.
I don't
have to do that either.
Yeah, yeah. Well, my friends didn't even know who it was. I called it Rip Van Kringle. Because my nickname's Kringle to my true friends. And so that was, I hadn't played in costume since then. But that was my deal.
I play every Halloween. Every Halloween, maybe 23, 24 in a row now I've worn.
So you play as an old man on Halloween?
No, a lot of times I wear a pumpkin with the bottom cut out. Uh-huh. Pumpkin head. But I like Halloween. It's the one day a year we admit we wear costumes.
Well, in San Francisco, they do it for this marathon called Beta Breakers. It's a whole other Halloween that happens just a couple weeks ago. People just get crazy over there.
Thing?
Yeah, it used to be a legit run for athletes, and then it turned into a big Mardi Gras party. Wow. Mardi Gras-esque party.
Yeah, yeah,
where
sure.
People just, you know, they indulge.
I don't know. There's something about Halloween. I like that, the costume thing.
I like that better than the marathon. I'd rather
like
dress up
like
as something on Halloween.
Day, you know, September 19th. Actually, I think there should be only one day a year where we don't talk like pirates. That would be heaven for me. You know, the guy at the gas station, the guy at the bank, you know. Hand me over me booty. Hire that I do. You know this guy, Robert Newton. If you ever watch pirate movies before, what was it, Treasure Island or something? Robert Newton was Long John Silver, I think in 50 or 51. Well, before that, there's no pirate talk yet.
Uh-huh.
Nobody knows what. There was no recorders.
No Shiver Me Timbers or any of that stuff.
He came up with that because he was from a part in England called Cornwall. He just used his home accent. And somehow that came on as like, that's how we be talking. Jim Ladd. Bring me another cabin boy. This one's tar. You know, all this stuff came from Robert Newton. This actor, he died of alcoholism in late 50s. Maybe the year I was born, maybe 57 or something. But this cat became, you know, the...
Yep. The poster boy? Poster pirate?
He was the pirate voice.
Yeah,
no one knew.
Obviously, the original pirate?
Look, there must have been French and Spanish pirates. They weren't talking that way.
No. Yeah, everyone forgets. Oh, no, man, the first pirate's definitely from Southern California. Yeah, right.
Well, actually, he was from England. He came and moved here to do Hollywood.
It's just amazing how, you know, lots of people in this country think that stuff just came from here. You know, it's, you know.
Oh,
it's just the ignorance of the history.
Speaking of costume people, they're getting arrested now on Sunset. You know, there's a whole industry of cats who dress up as Batman and shit. I don't know, the cracking down on them.
So instead of giving the homeless or people a hard time, they just go and find people dressed up like lunatics?
Some guys. Big Superman, put them in the pokey. You know? Maybe it's a
see if he can break out of this place.
Maybe the cops don't like it.
You're not Superman.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I know Superman, and you're no Superman.
That makes sense. I mean, what, you know, why not?
Yeah. You know, because it is a heavy problem. I can see it ruining the country. And
well, I'm down for a tour of this. I want to go down. Is there a specific street where I can go?
Oh, it's
costume
in front of
watch?
The Man's Chinese Theater on Sunset on Hollywood Boulevard. They're all over there.
Okay.
And I guess I don't know who's complaining. You know, I don't know.
Real
Superman. Maybe they're aggressive panhandling. Maybe it's something like this. I don't know.
Well, that's the difference, man. Like, if you got a guy who's dressed up as a gold robot breakdancing, or you got a street guy who's giving it his all on some, you know, out of tune cover songs, but then you got these guys that are just gonna wear the costume and still panhandle. You gotta give something. You gotta do a shindig or a dance or something.
Gig.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can't panhandle just because you're dressed up like Batman.
Yeah.
That ain't right.
Yeah. Wear a Batman suit all day. rubber kind of thing. Yeah, rubber, right, because the modern...
See, what if the Batman guy dressed up and did all those Prince covers from the first Batman movie, the Prince soundtrack?
Well, that one, I think, a little more comfortable. What was that, silk or something? Spandex? The rubber one,
but what if he had a guitar and he played the Prince jams from... Now, that'd be something to tip the guy.
I wonder what the idea of the rubber suit... Because they didn't like the guy belling. I guess Adam West was kind of belling. So if you put up this fake rubber muscles and...
Adam West didn't have fake rubber muscles, did he?
No, he was wearing like
he was
this
straight up.
Spandex or whatever. What was that? They even probably didn't have spandex yet or something. Lycra. Leotard, Lycra. Yeah, who's what? Where you versed in costume? What do they call it in Japan? Cosplay. They
cosplay?
Call it cosplay. Yeah, like you're playing in costume. And they have like conventions of this stuff, cosplay. I guess we got them too at the Comic-Con and sci-fi.
Find the liquid Trekkie. Latex.
Latex?
The liquid latex. Just paint it on.
Anyway, so you move past the stage of having to do acoustic guitar in an old man outfit.
Right, yeah, so I can actually do it with my real normal clothes. And I've been just trying to do those shows. I've been calling it Liquid Indian.
Yeah, so this is right in the now.
This is in the now, here. Yeah. I'm working on, you know, on a record, trying to get it done. It's acoustic based. It's got some drums, some electric guitar, but it's...
Do you play the drums?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been revisiting that to much glee. Well, really happy with that. It's been a lot of fun. Playing the Pearl Kit again.
Yeah, the Pearl Kit.
Yeah, the Smoky Chrome Pearl Kit, man.
Wow. And you're just overdubbing on yourself.
Mm-hmm. I play the guitar first and then just wing it on the drums after that. And it usually syncs up all right.
Grohl, Stevie Wonder, they did with drums first. And then, because they did some one-man records, right?
Drums, they did drums. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
In some 70s, like maybe Intervisions or something. Some of Stevie Wonder, Prince, too,
mm-hmm.
did one-man records. And start with the drums.
If you know the whole jams, it's no problem. But the stuff that I'm doing on the solo record is kind of minimal.
Yeah.
It's just for accents, so... It's fun. It's easy.
Guitar-wise, inspiration?
Started out with Sonic Youth.
Lee Thurston.
Yep. And then Jimmy Page is probably my favorite guitar player in the universe. I recently, in the last 5 years, it's my personal opinion is that I think probably the one... I mean, I don't even want to say underrated, but I mean, it's new to me. It's a cult for most... But I think one of the most amazing guitar players that I've ever heard in my life is Frank Zappa. And I had no idea until all the guys in Triclops turned me on to it. And it would just get to a point in the song where he's doing his thing, he's got his thing going on, and he just decides to casually play electric guitar and just rip your head off. Yeah. You know, that was cool. That was really cool. I was really into what the Mars Volta was doing. You know, I really liked the John Theodore's drumming. Was a big inspiration. But the thing is that when I usually take from the drummers and translate it to being inspired on the guitar.
Great.
You know, that's usually how I do it. I'm trying to think of... like Cobham,
Miles,
you know.
In his autobiography, he said he got trumpet phrasing from hearing Frank Sinatra sing.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I think cross-pollinating inspiration. Less is a chance of ripping off and copying.
Right.
Using a different machine.
Yeah, I'm still terrible at cover songs, man. You know, the only covers I ever did were on those first bands of mine on the drums, and I never learned how to play anybody's stuff on guitar. It was all my own. So, you know, I could play, like, some standard blues stuff, but
can't
swing it with any of the covers, man. Yeah. Somebody throws me in there and says, this is the tune. I'm like, I'm dead in the water, you know.
Well, Christian, I want to thank you for coming on the show.
I want to thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Thanks to Matt for making it happen, too.
Come on down.
Yeah.
It was cool, man. We got the show organized by email, and one of the emails that came to me had Matt's phone number but your name on it. So when I called him to talk about the show, I was talking to you when he answered. I was like, hey, Matt, Mike, how you doing, man? Hey, listen, I'm going to be the...
Yeah,
man,
he's
like,
got the wrong
oh,
number,
man, I think you got the wrong number.
I won't blow him off. He's
I'm coming over.
What time am I coming over? What? What are you talking about, man? That's how it went down.
Bum rush.
Well, thank you for coming over. Brother Matt, thanks for being in the bed.
Cool. Thank you all.
Were you driven down?
I was. By my family sitting right next to me over here.
Nice. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Dad. Thank you so much. Here.
Big respect.
Respect to you, man.
It's been good luck with the Liquid Indian. I want to play some. I played one before, but you send me some more, okay?
I will.
Okay.
I will.
It's been June 6, 2010, Watt from Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.